I'm joined here today by Eric Adler, CEO of Prudential Real Estate Investors. Eric, thank you so much for joining me here today.
Thank you.
We talk a lot within commercial real estate about the wave of capital that's impacting our deal flows and our strategies. Yet when we talk about these significant capital flows coming into the market, particularly the major markets, I think there's one question that I certainly have is that, what exactly do we mean by that? Is this actually hot money that's going to be out at the next sign of any volatility, or is this actually capital that's here to stay for the long term? Now, Eric, as CEO of Prudential Real Estate Investors, you have an exceptional view globally of what's going on. So talk to me about cross-border capital flows. What are you seeing on the ground?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I think as cycles move along, you always see this wave of capital coming in and out of real estate. But this time it is a bit different. And there are two reasons for that. One of them, and I'll first take your point about hot money. I remember the last cycle, you will have the various financial institutions that find that real estate seems like a better value play than some of their classic assets, whether that's hedge funds or private equity firms. But the amount of hedge funds, private equity firms, and others that I've never heard of before coming in this time is quite surprising, frankly. There's a lot more of it. Some of it sticks. We do know some of these players have been through several cycles, but many of them will move on as the cycles move on. But the other big change is really the flow of sovereign wealth money, and particularly some of it coming from the East. And this money has been in real estate for a long time in Asia. And now as it's coming west, it's bringing a pragmatism and a flexibility we haven't seen before. And I think much of that is here to stay. These are long-term investors. They do not need leverage, so they probably won't get burned by that like the last wave of capital came in and got hurt in the last cycle. And they don't necessarily think in terms of pure IRRs. They're ready to have very long hold periods, and they're very cash flow driven, and they're ready to work hard in an asset to get that cash flow to build up over time and be a real inflation hedge for them.
You talk obviously about the appetite of these types of investors, you know, perhaps these longer hold investors, the sovereign money. We've obviously all been talking about, you know, them going to the core markets, the New Yorks, the San Franciscos, and we've seen valuations really increase. Are they looking now at secondary, tertiary markets? How exactly are they beginning to, you know, look outside of that core market?
Some really are thinking very long term, and they're saying, you know, we do want to stick with major markets. We're ready to pay a little more to build a portfolio that'll be bulletproof over multiple cycles. But other ones are, again, very flexible, very pragmatic. And they were all coming in thinking, I want major markets, stabilized buildings. But as they see the competition revving up for that, they're ready to move to secondary markets. And they're clearly ready to move up the risk curve. And because of that other base of money that's staying in the core markets, a lot of the traditional investors are also being forced to move up the risk curve. So it's creating an interesting dynamic where the taking of more risk is some of the newcomers, but many of the established players are looking at the major markets thinking there's a lot of competition and having to go up the risk curve. And we're no exception. We're doing the same thing.
We are seeing higher valuations in the core markets, particularly valuations that have gone beyond 2007 peak levels. Does this mean that we're right now in a new era of compressed returns, you know, higher valuations, higher pricing?
I think we've been around for over 40 years, so we've seen cycles come and go. And you hate concepts of new paradigms. So the idea that there's a new normal, I'd say you can't really bet on that. You have to expect that cycles will remain part of real estate and that prices will come down. I do think, however, that some of this new money that's really here to stay in these major cities is going to make some of these cycles more short. So the fact that at some kind of top of the market or when interest rates spike up, you're going to have people pull out of real estate temporarily. There's such a backlog of long-term money looking to own those assets that I think if you do see cap rates expand, you'll see them compress back to these kinds of levels quickly. So you may be consistently coming back to this kind of what we're feeling is a high water mark. I think it's one that we're going to be testing regularly. And if you add another phenomenon, which is really urbanization, you're seeing more and more people coming back to these major cities, whether that's the US or Europe. And that means that there's a possibility that you'll see rents continually maybe come down, but cyclically come back up to new levels. So I think there's a high likelihood that there will still be cycles. You'll still have to time your entrances and exits, but you may be coming to numbers that we're never going to look back on. These numbers won't look so high in 10 years.
Now, it is very difficult in terms of sourcing deals. Prices are high for absolutely everybody. You're obviously looking at a lot of the major markets, particularly in North America. How do you overcome the challenges in terms of deal flow, in terms of, you know, acquiring properties? You know, how are you facing the challenges of today?
Well, I think our footprint gives us a big advantage. Footprint and the amount of experience we've had over many cycles. Because when I look at the business from a global standpoint, I see opportunities and I see challenges everywhere. But we're in enough different regions and enough different asset classes and strategies that there are always relatively interesting plays. others where you have to be ready to walk away from. And I think having a large footprint allows us to be disciplined. If you're very mono product, you live and die by that product. It takes incredible discipline to say that it's overpriced and you're going to walk away. Whereas I think the way you do it is by being diversified and being able to offer large investors many, many options.
You did talk a little bit in regard to adding risk. Where does it feel right to actually add risk today?
Without doubt, the U.S. right now. And Europe's, I think a lot of the risk has been added. A lot of high-risk money has come in. That may have been a bit premature, but we do think the time is right to be ramping up for that. So we're very much looking at adding risk in Europe. The dynamic between the U.S. and Europe is very different, so there are different reasons for doing it.
Where are you most bullish in terms of the U.S.?
U.S. really, it's across the board. If I think about the what we call the main food groups, office, there's a good cyclical time to be in the office market. And again, a lot of this is underpinned by a lack of supply for 5, 6, 7 years. That supply is coming back on market, so the supply side is a concern 3, 4, 5 years from now, but demand is so strong, I think it's still a good time to be buying. Residential is another big one that people may be concerned about. The multifamily sector was the first one to really take off, and it's true, the supply's been building up for a while, but if you look at new home creation, it just keeps on going. So again, we're very cautious. There are some areas we're more concerned about regionally, but generally, we still think it's a decent time to be buying into the multifamily market because of this incredible amount of new housing formation. Industrial is the same. There's all kinds of things happening with the internet that mean industrial is really taking off. That's an area where supply is picked up very quickly. So industrial might be a quick cycle, is our sense. And then retail really hasn't fully taken off. So there's some good value there. You just have to be mindful of which concepts you're betting on. Some concepts were misguided and won't work.
You're a significant player in Europe and Asia, and I'd love to get your thoughts. Are you still maintaining that discipline in terms of your strategy? Are you focusing in on few key markets, you know, when it comes to Europe and Asia?
Yeah, that's a big change for us from the last cycle. Again, we've been in those markets quite a long time, both of them. And we've in Europe, I don't think there's a market we haven't at some point in our history invested in. Asia's a bit less of an extreme, but over 10 markets we've invested in. And we've cut that down greatly, and there are two reasons for that. So in Europe, we definitely are looking at the three big markets for us, which are UK, Germany, France, and also the other Western European markets, Italy, Spain. They have their own dynamics, but those are places we believe we want to have a local presence. If you're really going to be a serious player, you have to decide where you're going to bet enough to be able to build local teams that are sustainable. So you have to have a reduced amount of cities. The other one's liquidity. It's an illiquid asset class. People forget that at the top of every market. And there are some markets that look very exciting and a lot of people are talking about, but they're small. And so if you buy any kind of meaningful stake there, if the markets turn, you're going to have a hard time getting out of them. And so those two criteria, where we want to build that local presence and feel we have an expertise and where we have true liquidity, leads to 5, 6 countries we're going to focus on in Europe. And in Asia, it's four or five countries. You know, that's Japan, Australia, Singapore, because we've always had a very big presence. And you have to be in China. China's quite a ride, but it's such an important part of the future of the world economy. You have to be there.
And just talk to me just for a minute in regard to the growth prospects, particularly for the UK, France, and Germany. It has been anemic, particularly for France and Germany. How do you balance kind of the investments against perhaps such anemic growth?
Well, the first thing to say in Europe, and that's the big advantage of Europe, if you think about the U.S., where I said there were 5 years of little supply side growth, and now it's starting to pick up. There's been no supply side growth. There's just been no building in Europe for six, seven years now, and it's not really taking off outside of central London. There's very little building going on. So and the economies have adapted to zero growth. So frankly, 1% growth, there's a bit of a floor under rents. It means this recovery will be slower. Not as predictable, but it'll last longer. So we think it's a great time to be looking at Europe again because there's just no supply whatsoever.
One theme that I do get from what you're saying is really that you, in this market, in this cycle particularly, you really have to be focused and very disciplined in terms of how you actually approach commercial real estate investing. Does that mean then that you actually foresee perhaps greater volatility over the short to medium term?
Yeah, it's interesting because the world feels more volatile, but it's happening, the volatility that we're seeing geopolitically, for example, or even economically, if you think of China, it's happening at a time where the real estate cycle is very favorable. So it takes a lot to knock an early stage cycle off of its trajectory. I'm surprised by how little we all talk about what's going on in the world, and then prices just keep rising. And I do think it's because of the phase we're in now, and that'll change.
So when you look at commercial real estate investing, I think one of the important questions is, where are we in the cycle? So where are we today?
Well, on the demand side, I think we're still fairly early in the cycle. But obviously, with cap rates being lower, prices, as we mentioned earlier, are quite high. And the supply side is building up. And I think it's going to build up quite quickly. The market's really taken off. So, 3 years still feel pretty good. But I think it's going to be very important to start to distinguish within the next few years where you're going to be focusing your energies. This is a great time to be taking risk. A few years from now, it might be time to reduce some of that risk and really stick to some of the more gateway cities. It'll be safer, I think, within the next few years to focus more on those kind of core assets. And ideally, if you own them, you just want to keep them. It'll continue to be hard to buy new ones. But some of the risk you're going to want to start reducing within the next few years.
So as you look at Europe, where are we in the cycle there, and particularly for Asia as well?
All right. Well, Europe is further behind. So obviously that means we have a further runway to play with, particularly when you see the supply side. The demand hasn't totally picked up. So I think there's more room to run in Europe. I'd say 3 years from now, we're still unsatisfied with the strength of the recovery, which is a good thing for long-term investors that want to buy assets over a period of time. And Asia is interesting because it's probably the one that was the one that survived the crisis best and just kept rising. And a lot of that's on the back of China's strength. And as we see China trying to manufacture or create a soft landing, just that little bit of air coming out of the Chinese economy is starting to take some of the air out of the real estate markets. And I think, interestingly enough, this is probably that time now to be sticking with really good assets, being careful on risk, but preparing yourself for a few years from now, taking big risk again. I think Asia is going to be an interesting one as the U.S. is starting to slow down. Asia is going to be taking off again.
So how do you actually grow the firm over the next 12, 24 months?
Well, there's two answers to that. One is we have some areas that we think are very exciting for the future. Asia's one. And clearly looking for, we're very well known for our open-ended funds in the U.S. Outside the U.S., it's harder to build those. You don't have a lot of core assets and a lot of markets to choose from. But in Asia, with all of the developments that's been going on, I think you will. So the idea that there's a more open-ended product in Asia is a big push for us. Building a debt business in the U.S., debt's very mature, but I think being able to be more competitive doing whole loans in the U.S. is going to be very important for us. And this value-added play in Europe. But if you really want to look for a dark horse place to grow a footprint, I'd say it's Brazil. Brazil is probably the major market that's looking like it has the most volatility, clearly whether that's political or economic. But if you really believe that that country is going to continue on a path that it's been on for the last 15 years, there's going to be some great opportunities in Brazil a few years from now. But probably more importantly, because if you really look back at cycles, if you want to build your footprint, you really have, if you think of a cycle as 10 years, just take an example, you really have 2 years out of those 10. And it's the 2 years at the bottom after you've come out of a downturn. And the players who treated their investors right, did the right things to reduce risk coming into that downturn, are the big winners of the next cycle. So the real thing we're doing is just making sure we're making good investment decisions for our clients, treating them the way they should be treated with transparency, communication, and focusing very much on risk. The question you asked before is key to our minds. A few years from now, when are we going to start pulling back in the U.S.? Because that's how you grow your footprint. The winners out of that handling the downturns are the ones that have a great trend in the next cycle.